Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Really excited to hear from you all again. I am Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital, the only business hospital in the world. And today is your Market Monday. Really, really excited about our guest today. Our guest is Jason Buckley. And Jason Buckley is the president of Titan Armored, and we're going to talk with him or speak with him a little bit later here today. But, you know, on this show, our job and our goal is to help your businesses do a lot better, to make sure that your business has experienced great health and that you understand new realities around your business that make you successful. As a reminder, we help all kinds of businesses as we're industry agnostic and class agnostic. So you could be a very large corporation, or if you are within a small business sector, we're talking $50 million and under, 500 employees or less. You could be a startup founder, a micro business, a boutique business, a mom and pop shop. Any of those are applicable to our conversation and our discussions. And that's what we're here to do, is to provide you assistance. If you want to join into the conversation, please give us a call at 859-291-2255. Once again, it's 859-291-2255. There's always so much going on in our world. You know, earlier today, while I was working and helping some patients, I happened to be looking at CNN and just looking at what's happening with the crisis over in Ukraine regarding the war and then what impact that has on us here in the U.S. And if you're a banker, if you're a small business owner, you've seen this impact directly, you know, amongst the business. Within how you typically operate and amongst your consumer base. If you're just a consumer or if you're a person that works a job, you've also been affected by the inflation and by some of the other control factors that causes our reality to shift. And so when you talk about the federal, you know, guidelines increasing rates among the feds, that is hitting us very hard when it comes to buying homes or when it comes to obtaining loans for businesses. All of these things become really, really tough, and we have to understand the magnitude and the ramifications that it has on our business. And that leads me to programming around crisis management or even adaptive scenarios where we can look at a situation and say, how do I minimize the damage or minimize the effect of what's going on to me as a business owner? There's a lot of things that exist outside the realm of our capability and outside the realm of our own skill set that affects our business's revenue and or bottom line. So if you're a company and you need more equipment and you go to obtain a loan for that equipment, and now all of a sudden the qualifications have become stricter or the amount of capital that it takes you to obtain that loan has now increased because of a global event or because of some other, you know, event outside of your scope, well, now you have to find a way to reduce the damage of that. And so always looking for strategies, looking for techniques, if it's in the gig economy or if with among civilian life, you know, it might be called as a hack, if you will. But how do you look at the world differently and take advantage of certain opportunities and strategies that will reduce your outgo or maximize your efforts? These are things that we're always looking for here on Doctor's Orders, and to provide a prescription for you business owners so that you can operate better and maintain a healthy business. So without further ado, I'd like to bring in today's guest on Market Monday, and that guest is Jason Buckley. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Baker.
Fantastic. And so just tell the audience a little bit about your work, your position, and kind of what you do for Titan Armored.
Well, at Titan Armored, we are an armored car company exclusively designed to service financial institutions. I am the president of the company. I started the company 4 years ago, and you know, it's an industry that had some needs and a lot of voids that weren't being met. So 4 years ago, we started this company again, specifically around the needs for financial institution services and cash handling services.
It's awesome that you mentioned that, because I see a lot of startup founders. I see a lot of people with the interest of starting businesses. And I can tell you one thing, in all my experiences, I've heard of no one saying that they wanted to start an armored car company, if you will, especially servicing that to banks. And the reason why I find it so interesting and so unique, and I want to make sure that my listeners are getting this, is because when you think about providing a service, providing that service comes in so many ways that oftentimes we're not even thinking of all the ways that we could provide a service that might be within our skill set that could either be lucrative or offer us the opportunity for longevity in the space. Talk to me about your experiences in that particular space and how this became essentially your chosen calling, if you will.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been in the industry for over 20 years and working for people, you know, throughout the industry, just kind of seeing how it operates, seeing the trends and the way that the kind of the services were going and the industry as a whole was kind of going, you know, just kind of identified that there were some needs that needed to be met. And most commonly, it was just good service, right? It's just, you know, providing a good service provider for the financial institutions to rely on. We did that by, you know, providing good communication and good employees.
Well, so you're talking about what I consider to be a health metric, and that's the foundation of business. Number one is your servitude. How does that work? And in the event that it's built out appropriately, that you can build a base out of it. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you saw over 20 years or have seen over the last 20 years regarding what is considered bad in that industry that you thought, you know what, we really need to fix this part, or we can really have a hand in this to make this better for our direct customer, which conversely, and we'll talk about later, has a big impact on our indirect customer.
Yeah, so being a former athlete and seeing how teams were built, successful teams, things like that, it's kind of the same in business, right? You want to have good employees that can grow within your organization, employees that can leverage other opportunities within your business by using their strengths. And I think that's what a lot of companies miss out on, is the opportunities to promote within, to grow and develop your staff and the team that you have already built. A lot of them let them go to other companies, competitors. We've been very successful at hiring from those competitors at this point. Great team members. You know, we have a great all-star cast, is what I like to tell all of our financial institutions, and they'll mimic that when they start getting our services and they see it firsthand. And it really just spins from having good employees that want to work hard for that company because they see that they're the company's vested into the, you know, employee. And I think that's just kind of missed in a lot of companies at this point, just that opportunity to continue to grow your employees.
Well, you mentioned it as it relates to a service and as it relates to the human capital, which we both know that the humans that you have doing anything is always the most vital. You know, you talked about having a background in athletics. We know that if you don't have the players, it really doesn't matter how good you are as a coach if there's no players on the field. And in this instance, you have to have the right group of team members in order to deliver the service that allows your company to grow, expand, and scale. But when I'm thinking about the armored car industry, are you guys much, much more of a service? Are you a product? Are you a hybrid? What exactly is the thing that, you know, someone or a bank is envisioning when they're hiring an armored car company?
So it's predominantly a service, right? We you know, pick up funds, deliver funds, just transporting them on the behalf of the financial institution, wherever it may be, to a local branch or to an ATM machine. Regardless, it's just a service that we're providing. But they expect that service to be done, you know, at a set time. You know, they really want to have an understanding of those and the commitments from the service provider. And a lot of that's been lost in our industry. A lot of those times aren't met.
Well, and I'm going back to an original question that I was going to pose, is that is a, I would say, a direct correlation or a direct impactor to the indirect customer. So the people that actually go to the bank or are customers of that bank, you guys are affecting their livelihood and the bank service to service them appropriately. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if we don't fulfill our end of the replenishment to either the branch or to the machine, then those bank customers or the credit union members won't have the money to go and get out.
Which means that every solution that you all have, and I imagine that some of the things that you all run into is a little bit more vast than what we probably think as commoners, but probably also very common and regular as any other business. But wrapping this portion up is that you have to think about things not so much to what this credit union or financial institution needs, but also what are the needs of the members of their community. You know, a large bank or a nationally run bank has different needs than a small community bank, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a great difference in the two and what they look at.
You know, community bank people, and I can just imagine if you were in a small rural area, maybe your bank has been provided by essentially the same families generation after generation, whereas these larger banks, you know, have people coming and going all the time. And so how they use your service and the tips that they need from you or the strategies that you all provide, the frequency of your service, that could be a tremendous gap or difference. Is that right?
Yeah, your bigger financial institutions will implement more technology. Technology means less interaction with a teller at the FI, or in a rural community, they like that face-to-face interaction a lot more. So it definitely changes our services. It changes a lot about our, you know, how often we have to go somewhere to do a service and how much interaction we have with people as well. Whether we're servicing more machines because the financial institution has more equipment to service versus less branches. So it definitely impacts the community that way.
Now, you mentioned that you guys are about 4 years in. Are you guys nationally run now, or are you more regional? What is your footprint like?
Yeah, at this point, we're a regional company. We're based more in the Midwest. We do have some outlier offices that we're starting to put in. That reach out to the East Coast and things, but for the majority of our business and our appetite for growth is really just stemming from the need in those areas that need it the most and where their services are struggling the most, and that's kind of the areas that we've been navigating towards.
You know, talk about something as it relates to the need. But growing a company, there's always needs that the individual company has as it tries to service the needs of others. And you went through this. You've been in the industry a long time, but then with Titan Armor, you essentially have watched it from, you know, growing this thing from nothing essentially to where you guys are now. Just speak to the audience a little bit about just some of the struggles that you encountered. And one of the reasons why, and I'll qualify the question, is what I'm demonstrating to the audience is that no matter what type of business you run, there's always going to be barriers and obstacles that are unique to the industry, but in many cases, they could be common. And so having the guests come on and talk a little bit about whether it was a hiccup, whether it was an obstacle or a story they remembered becomes a benefit to the listeners in that any one of those stories that you remember that you can share as you guys were ramping up the Armored Car Company and what that looked like for you.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we started this at a pretty unique time, right, in our world that we're going through now with COVID and the various things that are about us now and globally. And so we've had a few things impact us. So in the very beginning, it's always employment, right? We want to find the right people. We want to bring them on and get them to stay and work for us. Historically, in Armored Car, employment's always been the number one key issue in the industry is keeping employees, creating longevity, things like that. Moving to more recent, it's been the supply chain issues, right? So we have vehicles that aren't getting to us made for to keep up with our demand. We're not able to get those in and turn those vehicles around fast enough to meet the demand in certain cases. So we're oftentimes having to wait and let the vehicle demand pick up. So once we get some vehicles and we can add routes and keep building it out, so on and so forth. So that's been a massive hurdle for us. But then the more recent thing, which has just spiked, is the fuel surcharges, you know, the fuel cost that we have encountered as a business that drives and operates vehicles all over the you know, our territories and constantly on the road and running, you know, fuel prices are something that obviously you have to look at. You have to implement strategies to take up that additional cost, operational cost that you didn't really think of in the beginning. So there's some factors that have changed over the last 3 years that really have impacted us differently, all unique things that have just come about.
Well, you know, the way that you just outlined that literally was a stair step of punching into the face. You know, I'm saying that this way intentionally because it has to feel like one thing after another thing after another thing with the timing of the company. You know, if you took something as COVID, for an example, everyone was impacted by that very similarly. There were some winners, obviously, in the pandemic, and there were a lot of people that lost. And maybe there was some that's neutral, and that would be, you know, clear at any era. But particularly, when you're trying to get a company off the ground, you've got to shake a lot of hands. You got to see a lot of faces. Am I right in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's marketing. All that's key to relationship building, right? And people trusting in a new company, it's very difficult, especially a financial institution, to want to do business with a brand new company. They have so many regulations to go through and hoops to jump through to bring a vendor on, much less it being a brand new company. So there was a lot of things that we had to overcome in order to do so.
And you're looking to overcome that with, hey, by the way, I'm Jason Buckley. You might not know who I am, but I'm here to transport your top commodity, and you have to trust me in that. And oh, by the way, I can't even see you for 24 months based on health guidelines and restrictions. I mean, you talk about a massive obstacle there. And then let's forward a little bit. We know, excuse me, what happened with the supply chain, and looking at, I don't even have the equipment necessary. So not only did you have a human capital supply chain issue because you had to meet humans that would help you and grow the business, but now you need product that might be coming from a place that might be on restriction, where there might be issues, where things are being held up, and there's no plausible solution for that. And then you migrate right out of that right into the highest gas prices in the history of all of time and say, okay, well, our pro forma, we were good because we had made assumptions based on typical realms of inflation, but not inflations that are now 40-year high. Now we have to take that into account, and that now reduces what we can do elsewhere. Mentally, talk to me about how you personally been able to kind of deal with that, because you talk about overcoming those challenges. But many business owners psychologically and emotionally feel damaged when these amount of occurrences happen. Talk to us a little bit about how you handle that.
Well, I think initially, you know, it's a little bit overwhelming, right, when you start running into some challenges such as those. But, you know, the important thing is to believe in your product, to believe in your reasoning for starting the business and doing what you set out to do and committing yourself to it. You can't go halfway with this. You know, it's 100% in at all facets of the business. So you have to go in you know, all the way with trying to attract and build the relationships of the industry. Luckily, I've been in the industry for, you know, over 20 years, so I had a lot of those relationships that I could go off of and utilize to attract the customers to us. But, you know, as we continued to build this thing out, I really had a grasp of where we had to be revenue-wise and things like that. Then I built in a few things to protect us from things such as fuel, inflation, or any of those other things. So, you know, I think it's just important to be well-rounded in a business, you know, in order to start it. So you really have to know all the you know, the areas of concern that you may be after. And then once you get it, and once you gotta keep it all, right? So the most important thing to me was once we started to ramp up and get where we wanted to be, I had to have a support team in to cover the needs of our customers and to make sure we didn't lose ground because I was picking up so much business that I couldn't keep people happy. You know, our customers were very important to us. Once we got them on board, we needed to make sure that what I sold them was the truth. And that's important. You know, be very transparent with them and in the process and how things go. and to honor what you're saying by doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, you just said a word that I was going to bring up to you was, with all the work that you've done over the years, you also would have had to have had a process. Whether it was one that you then revised when you got the Titan, or one that was an alteration of previous one, however that looked, you got to stay the course of the process. One thing that I see with my patients, and I ask them about how are they planning to grow, what is their skill set, what do they have to offer, what are the internal controls, and I'm oftentimes looking for a process or a system, and they don't have one. And so when things get bad, they don't really know what to look for. They don't really know how to persevere because they don't have something that they already believe in that's tried and true at a level that allows them to participate when it's rocky. But, you know, I would have to imagine, Jason, that over the 20 years, you've developed a process in that industry that you knew that you can lean on outside of just having a good network. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. My cousin, that was a successful business owner, in Iowa, you know, always told me it's the three-legged stool, you know, keep score. You know, you got to get work, keep score, and, you know, and get the business. So, you know, you got to keep everybody, you know, all those things going. You know, once you get the work, you got to keep the work, and then, you know, you got to account for it by making sure you're billing properly for it. So there's just a lot of phases to it that you have to stand by, and you have to make sure are continuing to go, you know, according to plan. Because if anything starts to falter in that, you know, in that process, you're right, it's detrimental. And if you get business, but you're not billing for the business, you know, that's just as damaging as not being able to get the business to start. So, you know, there's just some important key things to focus on that builds that foundation of your business.
Absolutely. And I think inside of those key things, you also have to know what is key versus what isn't. I imagine that during, whether it was the pandemic, whether it was during supply chain issues, any of it, and we're just naming those three, we know that there's a myriad of obstacles that always appear. But you would have had to stay the course with things that you had already known was sound, and then you had to do those really well. You know, kind of, you talked about athletics, so I want to use an athletic reference. If you're having a day and you just can't make a good, you can't make a jump shot, or you can't catch a pass, you got to go back to the foundation of what started it. And so you have to remember your elbow placement or your hand placement and begin with that, or your foot placement. You're doing that same thing in business where you're saying, okay, what are our core values? And then what do we do the best? And what is the thing that makes us different, or the thing when we created this thing that we knew we could offer to the world, what is that so we can focus at a high level and then govern that and manage that to the highest level? I think oftentimes we can be seduced by so many other realities that now we're not even doing our core thing really well. And I get the sense that you all never lost that, even amid any of the obstacles that you faced.
Yeah, it's important. It's like sales 101, right? When you're selling and you need to bring in the business, it's almost more important to sell the opportunity to be in front of someone as it is just the deal itself. So you have to keep your funnel filled. You know, your funnel is going to be filled. So much business is going to continue to fall out. But if you ever let that funnel dry up, you've got no work that's going to be coming out of that thing. So, you know, there's just some fundamentals to that, you know, you just always have to know that there always has to be proposals constantly coming in, because out of those proposals, maybe you know, in your industry, you're going to get 10% of them falling out, 5%, whatever it is, you know. But that's the important thing, is making sure that you have the proposals out to customers, so you can have that trickling in. Once you start getting that consistent business add, you can start building other foundations throughout your operations and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, you talk about having that funnel and that pipeline, which is something that I help patients with regularly. But you were a president of a company in which you had great experience. You had to personally participate in ensuring that funnel was filled. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. Talk to us a little bit about that grind of what that looks like.
Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of different makeups and salespeople, right? You know, you have different types of salespeople. You have your farmers, your the ones that can harvest the accounts, and you know, you have your you know the grinders, the ones that are the hunters, and all those things. So, you know, I think it's important to find the personality out of whoever's selling in your organization, and really hone in on that, cater to their strengths, and stay away from their weaknesses. And if you can do that as an organization, you're going to thrive, because if you can find someone that's really good at hunting for you, they're going to always be filling your pipeline, right? They're going to fill that funnel. And then someone hopefully is a good closer. It's usually the executive at the company, the person that knows the most of the business. They can usually close the business because that's their wheelhouse. That's what they know. That's what they've always done. So, you know, as someone that's been in sales and doing, you know, running a company and things like that for years now, it's definitely, you know, you find those people. For me, I don't have the time to hunt anymore. So I find people that can hunt for me. And then what I like to do is come in and just close those accounts because, you know, let's be honest, nobody should know more of our business than me at this point. So it's important for me to stay out in front of the customers so they can hear things about what our company is going to do from me directly. And it makes closing easier. It makes the process easier for everyone.
You know, there's a lot of business owners, especially the newer ones, and that's who I'm talking to now in the audience. Or if your business is going in reverse and you're trying to figure out how to scale or increase your revenues, there's a lot of business owners that they will flat out tell you, I don't like sales. I don't like any part of the sales. Well, when I get to them, I always let them know that every person is a salesperson, either a good one or a bad one, and they just don't know it. But you can't afford to have that mentality when you own a company. When you own a company, you have to push the company, and pushing it literally falls under the guideline of sales. And so I imagine that you guys are coming out and you're fighting against other traditional companies such as, you know, I could name them, but I'm not going to. I guess I was about to, but I ain't going to. But in this case, is that you're fighting against typical large behemoths in your industry. You've got to walk into a town or walk into a saturated city and say, actually, we're better for these reasons. You had to put that hat on regularly, didn't you?
Every day, multiple times a day. You know, we're going against global companies, and us being a regional company, it's hard to sell against that, except it isn't. When you're going against the global companies, you know the global companies have many holes in their organizations, and as a regional company, you want to capitalize on what their holes are, and that's what we try to do. And a lot of it stems just from something as simple as communication. Communication's a really huge key in pretty much every organization. If you don't communicate well with your customers or whoever your endpoint is, it's probably not going to go well. Frustrations develop, problems develop, so forth. But, you know, you go back to, you know, what you were talking about with the importance of sales and people not wanting to do it. It makes up about 33% of your business. Again, it goes back to the three-legged stool thing. You have to get the work in order to keep the work. And then, you know, if you have those two, you got to make sure you're keeping score and billing for it, and you'll complete that circle and you'll be able to sustain yourself. But if you don't get one of those three down, well, your stool won't, you can't sit on it. So you have to have that good foundation.
Well, I want to go back to communication because that's such a misconceived term. And I deal with it every single day. And, you know, the definition of communication is giving and receiving, but there's a couple components to communication that I think are vital, and your opinion will be important to me. But one is frequency and timing of your communication. You know, so if you are selling something or you have a service or a product and you're servicing someone, how regularly you communicate with them and your responsiveness and the timing of that responsiveness is vital in growing the business. How much have you seen that play out while you were scaling the company and as you work to maintain your market share? How big has those two aspects been between the frequency and the timeliness of your communication?
Well, it's incredibly priceless because I tell everybody operationally, sales, any one of our departments, our project management team, whoever it may be, you have 24 hours to turn around a response to a customer. Why is that important? Well, customers have things on their plate. They're busy. Our financial institutions, well, some of them wear 15 hats. So they don't have time to keep going back to things. They want to get something off their plate and move on. And if you're dragging out a response for a week or two, that's no good for them. It's going to create frustrations, and it goes back to it all. Communication's easy. We have endless points to communicate with customers nowadays. You have cell phones, you have your desk phone, you have emails, you have all these different ways to communicate, and it's just getting easier to communicate. So there's really no reason that you can't turn things around quickly. And I find that the quicker you turn proposals around and the quicker you keep responding to customers, the easier it is to pick up business. And I can tell you, it happens so much for me, because the number one complaint out of everybody in this industry that I face is communication. It's poor communication. Some of my competitors charge their customers for calling in now to ask them questions. And those are all things that just create pain points for our customers. You don't want to create pain points. You want to eliminate pain points. And communication is by far the number one thing to do that.
But we know how difficult it can be. There, you know, it's hard to listen. It's hard to talk about things that maybe you're not great at. It's hard to do it when you experience high turnover in areas that are consumer-facing. All of those things become problematic in a business. You know, if we just took listening for an example, if you're genuinely trying to assist or help your customer base, you have to listen to what it is that they're proposing, because what you're hoping to gain from that is an understanding of, one, their world, two, how they view your services in comparison to how it assists them, and then, three, a better working relationship. Well, there was a commercial one time, Klondike Bar commercial, which could not have been better, but the husband was going to win a Klondike Bar if he could listen to his wife for 10 seconds. And they start that clock, and he's staring at her. And he, like, it gets down to like 6, and he's losing it. Like, he can't deal. And she's talking to him about the mall and this other errand she ran, and, like, he can't deal with it. And when he gets to that 10-second mark, I mean, it's kazoos and streamers and balloons, and he's cheering like he won the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, that's a satire, and it's hilarious, but the point is, we don't really want to listen to our customers. We don't want to create departments that behave in those ways that actually make us better. And then, like you said, we invent barriers because it takes us real work to communicate with the consumer that way. But it sounds like for you and Titan Armor that you guys have embraced that reality and you've been able to leverage it. Is that right?
Yeah, Doc. It's been pretty easy. You know, I go by a simple rule in life. Many have heard it probably, but you have two ears and one mouth. You listen twice as much as you speak. If you can do that, especially when you're trying to talk to a customer, you'll actually hear what they're trying to say, and you'll understand what they're trying to say, and then you can deliver the correct response and hopefully fix whatever their needs are. Or if it's in a proposal situation, you know, you want to hear what their needs are so you can address and propose to it instead of just propose everything. You always want to focus on their needs, because that's what everybody wants to take care of first.
I want to speak to that. We got to pause for a moment for a station identification. But today's section or segment of Market Mondays is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. Once again, it's Pro Elite Training. The word pro, the word elite is one word. Pro Elite Training, you can get it on your Google and App stores right now, or you can go to the website at getproelitetraining.com. Train with NBA, NFL athletes, along with MMA fighters. All of this is to help you train through the metronome of music to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. It's for all ages. It's a freemium model, so essentially meaning you get hundreds of drills for free. Download it today. So I want to go back to what you were saying, you know, briefly, because there's something else I really want to bring up and make sure that we don't miss. But listening with the intent to understand how to help. There's a lot of people, Jason Buckley, that ask me, well, you just have a consultancy, don't you? And I say, no, I don't. And they're like, well, you do. And I'm like, that's what you think it is, because that's all you know of. say I actually invented a business hospital and I invented the industry, and I have to walk them through what that looks like. But one of the differences is that I actually don't have an actual product. I don't have a certain method of operation. There are no milestones or actual deliverables for my work. And some people say, well, how do I know what you're doing? And I say, you'll know what I'm doing once I know what you need. So it takes me two sessions to listen as it relates to what my patient might need or what they're articulating as their issue before I can even come close to giving them a diagnosis. It takes a real amount of effort for me to say, okay, explain to me what is it you think your issues are. And as they're telling me what they think it is, I'm also listening for the way they say things, how they go about deriving at what their issue is, and what the other symptoms are. And in that case, my listening has to be the primary skill set that I have, not my solution base from the beginning. Does that make good sense to you?
It's perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so in your world, you're doing the exact same thing. It's just that the service you provide is how to handle the transportation of their dollars. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. But you're going back and saying that the fundamental skill set is making sure that you're servicing these individuals or these companies at a high level based on, did you hear what my concern was? And oh, by the way, did you hear my other concerns? Because I might not have known how to articulate those. How many times have you seen, because you are the expert in your space, that maybe a financial institution is deficient or inadequate in one of their offerings, and you have to then suggest and say, you didn't ask me about this, but I did notice A, B, and C. Does that happen to you at all in the industry or in the space?
Well, absolutely, because one of the things is calling yourself, or if you're a salesman or salesperson, you know, one of the things that you could quickly change that title to is an educator. You know, as an educator of your business, you have to educate the customer based on their needs and their, you know, their desires. You have to educate them on what you can do to fulfill that need or that desire that they may have. So you just try to really educate them on what you can do differently or what you can do moving forward that might change their business approach or whatever it may be. And I think that's a key thing. And what I always say is a salesperson should be just a great educator of the products or services that they're trying to offer.
Talk to me a little bit about, when we talk about changes, and this is what I wanted to get to, is industry-wide. You know, there was a time that we handled currency all the time. It was the only method or the primary method of how we bought things or how we exchanged currency. We know that now we're moving much more to digital realities, and I'm not so much speaking to crypto as I am just saying just credit cards, sales, to cash apps, to all the stuff that people are doing digitally. What does that look like in your world? Is that changing your business significantly, or has it only been a moderate change that you've been able to see?
Yeah, it really has been a moderate change. Over the years, you know, since I've been in this industry, I've always heard cash is going away, things are switching to cards. I don't carry cash. You don't carry cash. Who carries cash, right? But except all of our trucks are out transporting cash all over the country today. You know, cash is still a very real thing. Coin is still a very real thing. The first thing that's going to go at some point would be coin. And we have skids and skids and skids of coin going out every day all across the area. So, you know, people are still using it. What people don't realize is actually about 25% of the society is still unbanked. They don't have a bank account. So all of those people that don't have a bank account have to utilize cash constantly in order to make payments, do, you know, financial transactions. So for that population and for others, there's still plenty of people that do carry cash and utilize cash for certain things. It is a very real thing. I don't see it's trending in a different direction, but it's not trending downward very fast at all. So I do think it's going to be around. There's still going to be currency of some kind, but you're right, evolve or die really is what everybody's business model should be. You really have to evolve with times based on your industry. If things start to change a different direction, you have to really research it, figure out where that change is going to lead you to, and try to figure out how you're going to get there, because you have to continue to evolve.
You hit some things on the head that I personally was unaware of. You're talking a quarter of our population is bankless, and you know, it's something that at some level was in my mind. I've had plenty of arguments with individuals that don't have a bank account. I know these people, and I'm like, what are you doing, son? Why don't you have a bank account? And I just don't have one. And I'm like, well, there's no excuse for that. So I do know people like that, but to extrapolate that to 25% of our nation at that moment now is mind-boggling to me, because that makes cash very necessary. It makes coins extremely necessary, and it also means that it keeps the circulation going. And you've been in this industry 20 years, and what you're saying is that if there would have been a noticeable difference in how people were behaving toward cash, you would have either seen it or you would have felt it directly. And you're saying you really haven't seen it that much, despite what everybody has been talking about. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, when you figure starting an armored car company in 2018, most people would have projected in 1981 that cash wouldn't have even been around in 2020 or 2018, much less companies starting a business still in that industry that would transport currency. So for that very reason, you know, it's not dying. It's continuing to, you know, be utilized. It's continues to be very important in our society as a whole. Just to keep making the economy, you know, continue to move.
Well, I think especially when you talk about, you know, the livelihood of different areas, you know, the urban sector is different than the suburban sector, which is different than the rural. And when you look at how people go about doing their business, is that we're talking 25% that are bankless. But I mean, I'm just personally curious as to how many people with a bank or have a bank account that just don't participate in the cashless realities. I would imagine that you probably see a lot of that, once again, in the rural areas, but probably more than what we would probably anticipate in the urban sectors.
Yeah, it's definitely something that varies a lot. I can tell you coin volumes are much heavier in Kentucky than they are in Ohio and Indiana, but it's more than just that. It's still some people's comfort zone. There's still a tremendous amount of our population that relies on cash and keeps it and stores it and uses it because they do feel it's much safer, and it's something that can actually be, you know, accounted for. So for those reasons, I think a lot of people do utilize it and continue to circulate it and save it, you know. So some of the wealthiest people that I personally know carry cash on them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll use all small purchases at stores or restaurants or things just in cash. Then other people I know, it seems predominantly the middle class, they use all plastic. And it's just kind of the way that I've seen it in this industry. But cash is a very important part of just a lot of things still. And, you know, it's something that we continue to move.
I know I heard that this was just this weekend. I heard two different individuals reference that cash is king. And I talked to another individual who uses envelopes with cash in them to mark how they spend, from entertainment to, you know, things that they save for. And so those are just microcosms, if you will, of how, you know, people still view cash. And so that means that your industry still remains safe or has a very sustainable future in the event of how people's perceptions are, which leads me to another point, is that do you find it that there's a lot of things that are misconstrued in media or are propagated, if you will, saying that, oh, we're going to do this, but it really isn't that? Are there other realities in your industry that people have, you know, sworn by that just attested that this thing would not exist, or that it would, or that you should participate, and it just hasn't come to fruition?
Well, I mean, I think what keeps cash alive, a lot of things, is people just still uncertain about the security of using plastics, account hackers and things like that have really slowed the ultimate wave of cash going away at some point. I think those things are a real thing that you have to consider when you're looking at what to use moving forward. If your account gets hacked because you're using a card at a gas station, that's a real threat to you. But if you use cash, it's no big deal, right? You're paying for exactly what you're getting, and they can't get any more from you because you handed it to them. So in those aspects, I think sometimes I think media and things, everything's broadcasted around plastic this and plastic that. But the reality is cash is still used pretty much everywhere. It's always still going to be, I think, at least for hopefully for at least a long while, while I still have left working, it's still going to be the king.
Well, there's a couple things that you mentioned that really got me thinking, and there is a term that is really important for business owners to know. Well, it's really a combination term, but it's substitutes and complements. And so substitutes are just what they sound like. It's something that can replace your business, and a complement is anything that adds to your business. So if you're a Tesla, or you're a company that makes battery powered cars or electric cars, when the gas goes up, that gas going up becomes a complement to your gasless vehicle, right? And so in that case, you're looking for those realities in the world. Well, you talked about hackers and digital currency and the fear around there. Well, I've had 3 episodes so far in our Doctor's Order specials that spoke of risk, additional liability, and cybersecurity. And hopefully you listeners are hearing this, is that cybersecurity is needed because cyber crimes continue to increase. Well, if the general public continues to hear how much cyber crime is going up and how much you're affected by not having the right, whether it's firewalls or the amount of cybersecurity you should purchase, it only stands to reason that that reality becomes a complement to your industry, where people might say, well, heck, I just watched cryptocurrency literally lose $1 trillion in value. So I don't want to put my money there because that is all over the place. And I don't want to make everything digital, because if they take everything I have, which we don't know who they is, but neither does the consumer says if everything I have is gone, now I don't have anything. But if I have that cash on me and it's at least put in a bank and I can go to that bank that's FDIC regulated, then guess what? I'm better at it and I want to use my cash. Does that sound like something that would happen in your space based on the conversations, things you heard banks say, and maybe even some of their customers?
Yeah, I mean, all of that is always discussed in financial institutions. It's discussed within our organization. I mean, when you talk about security, we have to worry about it from a physical standpoint, but also, the cybersecurity side of things as well. But, when you hear about card skimming and things like that, I mean, that's a real problem that's been going on for a long time now. And it's something that's not going away. Companies out there, certain ones, can mitigate some of those issues, but it's hard, as just everybody knows, it's hard to eliminate it completely. You do the best you can to protect against it. But ultimately, utilizing cash or something like that does really help mitigate against any of that cybersecurity side. So it does protect our industry quite well until that all goes away, if it ever does.
Well, you're talking about some things that I want to remind my listeners of, is that as a business owner, you have to pay attention to everything that's going on around you, because it might have a direct correlation to your operation and to the overall health of your business. So a lot of times, Jason, what I will tell them is that things that are happening in the world, when we have our Worldwide Wednesdays, it becomes important to know what's happening. Or if we're talking about Tech Tuesdays, it's important to know what technology exists. And in your instance, what I've heard you say is that you're also a sounding board and a resource for these institutions that use your armored trucks. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, how do they view you when you come in? Because I would have to imagine they know that you're out in the field. They know that your workers are out in the field, and therefore they might want to know, what is someone else doing, or how does this service benefit me, or I heard this new technology was coming. Do you guys get into those conversations, and how much of that do you have to know in order to provide the type of communication that we spoke of earlier?
Yeah, going back to the education portion of it, right? We're educators. So as we, you know, continue to talk to more financial institutions, we try to educate them on cash usage trends, cash forecasting, things like that, that can help protect them from liability limits. You know, liability limits, it could cost them extra money. So there's ways that you know, strategically with an industry experience, you can help a customer out, you know, on lowering their expenses by providing them additional information that they may not have thought about. Or if they have, they still can't figure out how to reach their goals. And by some tools or metrics that we can offer, a lot of times you can help them reach those goals.
Are there anything, whether it's in the industry or whether it's within just the region, with your company, with institutions, are there anything that would obviously be appropriate, but anything that keeps you up at night that you think about and say, man, if this thing happens, or if we had a way to figure this thing out, is there anything like that that you can share with the listeners?
You know, from our standpoint, it's just the society as a whole. Physical security is always a real threat to a company like ours. You know, you just have to be aware and, you know, and just, you know, you really have to focus and pay attention. Those are a lot of the things that I think about as far as the business or the industry and the trends and things. As long as we stay the course, we really keep to our process that we developed in the beginning. I really do think a lot of success is yet to still come for us. But again, it's just, you know, for us, a lot of that, you know, I guess the thoughts and the fears or whatnot might be from just the physical aspect of it all and what we're doing.
You know, when I'm talking to business owners and we talk about how to grow business, because, you know, let's face it, whether your business is new or whether you're well established, you're still looking for ways to grow it. And grow it doesn't always mean that you make more dollars, but it could mean that you make the same dollars more efficiently, or it could just simply mean market share or that still has to be defined. But as you are working every day to make progress in that, in the company, having a comprehensive view is one of the health metrics that I think is imperative for every business owner to have. And what you just shared is that, yeah, we're thinking about trends. We're thinking about ways that we can provide a difference-making service in comparison to our competitors. But we're also thinking about the things that would hit us and that, you know, what would we do in the event that those things would happen? I know that just last week I was letting the listeners know that 9/11 happened, and that was a shock to a lot of businesses. I remember exactly where I was during that time. I was doing mortgages then, and obviously we couldn't do any more, or nobody was doing anything in the nation, but we really couldn't, because our entire livelihood was predicated on interest rates and the banks, and all of that was shut down. And then you turn around and you had the bailout of the banks, you know, 08, and that became a real reality for our country. And then we've got the pandemic, and I tell business owners that we should be prepared for something massive to happen at all times, and that you should make sure that your business is prepared. And this is going to sound like a joke, it kind of is, but it kind of isn't. But I'm looking at things from the zombie apocalypse to really the end of days at any given time, saying, how do I ensure that my company is fortified, that we can still continue to maneuver? What have I not thought about? And how does this put me in a better place than anything that might be considered my competition? It sounds like with your 20-year experience, you've been able to bring that to Titan Armored, as you guys have been able to grow the business. And then with that, you've actually been conscious enough about how you implement that. Talk to me about how some of these institutions, because one of these institutions had to take a chance on you. What does those relationships look like? And then walk us through just a little bit of how you've been able to grow it beyond the communication portion, but to where now they're loyal to you in a way that says Buckley understands what we're doing, Titan Armored services what we're doing, and then therefore they're helping us think about the world differently. Are there any examples of that?
Well, again, I think through the education process of what we're trying to do, and what we're, you know, how we're trying to serve our financial institution partners, there's a lot of that that builds. You know, you start out with just a simple conversation, and then once you get to the point where you're actually performing services, and they trust that you're doing that great job, we often get the term "you're a breath of fresh air." You know, when you develop that rapport with them, they develop confidence, and when confidence comes, you start building that relationship. And when you see them in person, they start asking questions, they start asking about other things, you know, and when they really trust the process, I think they just, they really open up to you, and you can learn a lot about your customers. I really do enjoy being, friends with a lot of customers, because I feel that they can trust not only me and the business that we're providing, but just the total relationship of what we provide, you know, as part of what, you know, what Titan kind of offers.
I think that's fantastic. If anyone is out listening, how can they contact Titan Armor for services? If there's a president of a bank, or if there's somebody where that's their derivative inside of the bank, how can they contact you all for more information or even service?
Our sales email address is the easiest way. It's sales@titanarmored.us.
All right, and say it one more time to make sure that the listeners got it.
sales@titanarmored.us.
Fantastic. And so, Jason, I know you've got a busy day today. I know it's packed with meetings. I want to thank you for coming on today's show, this Marketing Monday show, and just sharing a little bit of the expertise that you have in that space and within that industry. And I look forward to talking to you again soon, okay?
Thank you, Dr. Baker.
Absolutely. So, everyone, that was Jason Buckley of Titan Armor, president of Titan Armor, that is, who came in and really gave us a really clear picture and understanding of what's really going on in the Titan or in the armored truck industry. It's not an industry that I wouldn't think is really appealing or sexy. I'm telling you once before that I don't remember anyone ever saying they would want to go into that industry until you start talking about it and you find out how important that industry is. One of my umbrella companies is a promotional product company, in which we'll talk about probably next week sometime. But one of the lessons I had learned from dealing in promotional products were how many items were necessary. And one of my first visuals of this is we fulfilled some stickers for a DARE program in Pennsylvania, and the order was 100,000 stickers. And I thought, well, they would have to go somewhere in order to get these types of stickers. And my mind was open to all of the little flip-retripters, services, and other things that impact our life every day that we don't spend time consciously thinking about, but large conglomerates have been built based on the fact that our economy needs it, our society needs them, and because they're needed, someone has to be good enough to service that area. Titan Armored is one of those companies where you don't think about how the money is transported all the time. You might be used to the same commercial entities. However, there are other entities that can enter the market, participate, and have great success in those industries. Well, thanks so much on today's edition of Doctor's Orders. Tomorrow is Tech Tuesday. Can't wait for that episode. Once again, thank you so much, and I wish your businesses the best health.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.